Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson is away, and joining me by phone is our second guest. He's Troy Magny. He's a research scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and California Institute of Technology. And you might be wondering why we have someone from NASA joining us, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, joining us to talk about environmental issues. Well, he helped co-author a study which basically looks at the fluorescent nature of, in this case, evergreen trees, pines and firs, et cetera, and how that fluorescence relates to photosynthesis and, I guess, the overall forest health during the course of the year. So, first of all, Troy, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me and Glenn Wright this morning on This Green Earth.
Oh, you bet. Thanks for having me.
I want to let you know that I have a Glenn Wright. He's a Summit County councilman. We were just talking about some of the issues facing Summit County with respect to the forest health here. Summit County, Troy, over half of our county is forested, and a lot of that sits in national forest land. And we have our own challenges here with the health and wellness of our forests with respect to a warming world and drought conditions and beetle kill and invasive species. So I've invited Councilman Wright to sit in on this conversation. But I know I did my best to try to introduce what this study was about. Feel free to elaborate a little more. What this study attempted to do?
Yeah, sure. I guess I'll first say the reason somebody from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory is talking to you is because we actually do a lot of earth science down there.
Yeah.
About 30% of our lab's work is working on earth science and climate-related work using satellite technologies to try to understand our atmosphere and biosphere. What we've been able to do recently, which is really exciting, and I think also, you know, within the context of forest management, is we've been able to see this sort of fluorescent glow from plants. So plants emit a tiny amount of radiation in the near infrared that we can't see directly, and that can now be seen from satellites and from sensors on the ground. And we can use that to see exactly when the forest is breathing and how much and the magnitude and the timing of that breathing. So it's a really exciting technique. And I think, you know, in the near future, it might become super applicable in the context of forest management.
So that's interesting that plants give off a little bit, like you say, a low energy infrared on the infrared scale radiation as a part of their photosynthesis activity?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, for every photon that a plant absorbs, you know, it has a few fates. It can be used for photosynthesis, or it can be released as heat, as excess energy, and then a tiny fraction of it goes into this fluorescence part. And that's really the only part of photosynthesis we can see, and it's a tiny, tiny signal, but we can now see it, and I think it can give us a lot of clues. You've been talking about bark beetle infestation, for example, especially in Summit County. I mean, as you know, these beetles attack early on and you can't really tell with your eyes. It's the green stage of attack, right? But it does affect photosynthesis immediately, and if we can see that from space, it'll certainly improve the ability to map and detect early onset of things like bark beetle attack.
Cool. So you're seeing this from space, like you're saying, that a tree from our observation may look relatively green and healthy, but your satellites are picking up a different indicator.
Yeah, exactly. In evergreen forests, I mean, all around Utah and Colorado near you have been a sort of grand challenge in satellite remote sensing for a long time because they're green and they retain the same amount of chlorophyll relatively throughout the entire season. So we can't really see with our eyes when these fluctuations in photosynthesis and plant function change. But now with this technique to see this glow. I think it's similar to when you're walking on the beach and you see the phosphorescence from sand. It's this de-excitation of electrons that produces this tiny, tiny glow, and it's incredible to me still that we can see it from space.
Yeah.
And I think it could revolutionize the way we look at forests in the future.
I have a quick question for you. This is Glenn Wright from the Summit County Council.
Yeah.
Can your satellite images tell us when a stand of trees is essentially not sequestering carbon anymore, when it stops growing? Will these indications that you're seeing tell us that?
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's on the other end of it too. You know, like a lot of these aging forests, they may still look green and healthy to us, but we can see almost immediately when a decline in photosynthesis happens and when they're basically not taking up carbon anymore and becoming more of a carbon source than a carbon sink.
So we could actually use that data in the future to harvest the trees that have stopped sequestering carbon and make room for new trees.
As a form of logging management or something.
Logging management and carbon and future carbon sequestration.
Right. Yeah, I think that's an awesome application. And the technology is getting better with newer satellites that have come up that we can really improve the resolution both in time and in space of this measurement. And I think, you know, even though it's a very early stage of this type of science, we're really beginning to understand what we can and cannot do with it. And I think what you mentioned here is actually a great application.
So talk about these satellites, because are these satellites that were specifically sent up to do this, or were these satellites that were already up there and you find out this information because they were maybe doing something else?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think that's a really cool part of this story, is that it's completely serendipitous. These satellites were never designed to measure fluorescence. They're actually measured to design atmospheric gases.
Mm.
And in order to do so, you need a really, really fine spectral resolution. So you need to be able to break up the electromagnetic spectrum into very, very, very narrow wave bands. And, you know, we were able to use this information in these tiny wave bands to see this fluorescent glow from plants. And it was accidental. And I will say, you know, after some of the first discoveries of this technique using atmospheric gas measuring satellites, the European Space Agency has now funded a satellite that will launch in 2022, I think, or 2023, designed explicitly to measure fluorescence from plants. And that has applications across forests and croplands and really understanding the terrestrial biosphere as a whole.
What kind of spatial determinations can you get on that?
What's your
granularity?
Yeah,
so this is where you might cringe a little bit as a forest manager, because right now it's quite coarse. So like the best we can do is about 1.2 by 2 kilometers. And the best repeat time we can get is with the satellite that can produce about weekly resolution. So, you know, it's coarse in time and space. It's nothing like, say, your Landsat imagery that is often used in forest management. But I think that as we improve the retrievals and we can get more signal for the noise, I think we can begin to improve that resolution. But, you know, that's still, I think, at that resolution, they're big pixels. But like you said, if you want to see a large swath of forest that may not be photosynthesizing anymore or not taking up carbon, it's still, I think, super valuable.
If you just joined us, we're speaking with Troy Magny. He's a research scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and California Institute of Technology. We're talking about a study that he helped co-author that just was, well, I think it was released just yesterday or today, looking, among other things, at how plants fluoresce or otherwise glow, and how satellites are able to pick up that fluorescence and give a sense of the forest's health and wellness. There's another thing that seems to be part of this study, Troy, and that's how plants generate or produce a type of sunscreen during the winter to help to protect them from ultraviolet light. What do I have that right?
yeah, that's okay. Exactly right. I've been pushing that analogy for a while, but I think it's a good one, because as I said earlier, a lot of these forests retain chlorophyll, which of course is the pigment responsible for photosynthesis all throughout the year, and that's why to our eyes they appear green. But in the winter, the plants don't have any means to do photosynthesis because it's cold and they can't transport water. So what they do is they actually shuffle around some pigments within the needle called xanthophyll pigments. And I like to sort of, think of that as sunscreen, effectively. Yeah. So the plant is saying, hey, there's still a lot of light. I mean, as you know, in Utah and Colorado, you're still getting a lot of light in these forests in the winter, but the plant needs a way to protect itself. So it produces these tiny little pigments, cycles these pigments around to reflect that or basically dissipate that energy away. And see that, but that's a different topic and it's a different signal, but it's very linked to fluorescence.
Right. A listener just texted in. They have a question that wants to know. I know we focused on evergreens, pines and firs, and that's what we've been talking about mostly. But does this fluorescence show up for all types of trees, deciduous and coniferous trees and plants?
Yeah. In fact, every flora in the plant kingdom fluoresces. So, the applications are widespread. This study was focused on evergreen forests because they've been a big challenge for such a long time. But like I was mentioning that satellite earlier that the European Space Agency is now funded to launch, a big application of that was crops. So being able, like precision agriculture, helping farmers understand the timing and location of decreases in photosynthesis, as sort of a management tool to then go to a part of a field and say, okay, what's going on here? Do we have a pest infestation? Mm. Is it, what's causing this decrease in photosynthesis? So, yeah, there's a widespread application for it,
right?
I think.
Another question on the granularity of your of this study. Are there handheld units or portable units that could be taken into the forest to supplement some of the information you're getting? Say if you find a 1 kilometer by 1 kilometer area that's not sequestering carbon anymore, are there handheld units that we can take into the forest and essentially measure tree by tree?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And in fact, the plant physiologists and plant biophysicists were onto this fluorescence way before we were. They've been measuring it at the needle and leaf scale for decades, and they've been doing it with handheld instruments. Uh-huh. They've become an extremely valuable tool in understanding plant health and plant productivity, but they've never been able to scale it beyond the needle or the individual leaf. And that's really the big advance here is now that we can see this across the globe. But you're right, exactly. And that would be a great tool. And that's what we do in this study, as well as we use these instruments, small-scale fluorimeters, they're called, to validate the satellite signal.
And of course, I can't help but think of how drone technology could help supplement that research, too, by low-level flights across large swaths, square miles of forest, and get an image of...
absolutely.
Yeah. So lots of opportunities and to combine technologies. One's chocolate, well, another's peanut butter, and have a great tasting candy. So it's really interesting because I was also thinking about as we see in a warmer world, we actually may see expansions of plant activity, say northward, And this is a way of mapping forest, perhaps forest expansion or species types of expansion, because different species may give off a different fluorescence. And maybe there's a way of mapping growth in that sense.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, what you've just outlined was the basis for a proposal that NASA just funded of ours through their Arctic Boreal.
Oh, I was just a little late with that. Oh, okay. So this is the next step to another area of research.
Yeah, so we're trying to use it to understand how the large swaths of the boreal forest are responding to climate change. And greening is the term that has been used in our community anyways, the greening of the north, and in some cases the browning.
Right. And then of course you can also see the deforestation, the footprint of deforestation that's going on, say, in South America or along the equator, et cetera. I mean, it's just a fantastic way of taking, the planet's, not necessarily the planet's temperature, but the planet's picture.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Taking the pulse of the biosphere, I like to think of it.
Yeah. So, Troy, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people go to perhaps, read this paper and learn more about the research you're doing?
So the paper will come out in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences this week. But actually, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory website has some nice articles and resources that can help you understand what this signal is and what it might do for you.
And while I got another minute, you said that some 30% of Jet Propulsion Laboratory research is spent, exploring environmental issues. Are you working on other environmental research?
Yeah, it spans the globe, really. We have folks in our group looking at, like you said, deforestation in the Amazon, carbon sequestration in the rainforest, very applied work in cropping systems, looking at large-scale droughts. It's trying to really put the puzzle pieces together to understand our global carbon cycle, and that's a big part of what our group's working on.
And, of course, I'm going to assume that all this research is funded on a federal level in one form or another?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. All right. Yep. Well, I won't go any further there, but lots of luck with all your work you're doing and all the hopeful funding that you get to do this important work. Again, is there a website that people can go to learn more about what the Jet Propulsion Lab is doing?
Yeah, jpl.nasa.gov, and you can play around on there, and certainly you'll stumble across some of this newer fluorescence work there. And the OCO2 mission in particular is sort of leading this effort, the Orbiting Carbon Observatory.
Orbiting Carbon Observatory. All right. Well, again, this what's amazing about this, Troy, is that you say there's a serendipitous nature behind the discovery of how satellites can provide addition or information about our planet's environment. And good luck to some more serendipitous work.
Thank you. It's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, same here. Thanks a lot, Troy.